for the most entertaining talk anywhere. Stay tuned to LA Talk Radio, your real talk station. Your real 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
You're listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller, only on LA Talk Radio.
And good afternoon. This is Rick Franzi. Happy Memorial Day to everyone who's listening and celebrating that. Today I'm here in the studio, and I'm very excited to have as one of my guests today, Al Manfried. Al is the president and CEO of Security Financial Group and has been there since 1991. SFG is one of the top financial planning and wealth management firms in Southern California and was recently recognized as one of the top wealth managers by Orange Coast Magazine for 2009. SFG is also rated A+ by the BBB. That's the top rating a firm can achieve. Al has over 18,000 clients. Good afternoon, Al. How are you?
Very good. Pleasure to be with you gentlemen today.
Well, I appreciate you coming off your holiday to spend time with our audience. And let's get right to it, Al. Could you tell our audience about your path to Security Financial Corp?
Be my pleasure. Well, you know, I first started, I worked in the corporate world for Nestle, and that was not related to financial planning, but I found that I wanted to do something that really made a difference in people's lives. So I changed careers and started at Cigna as a financial planner about 20 years ago and really enjoyed it. I mean, first of all, everything you do makes a difference in people's lives. So you know that what you're doing, your work, your effort will help these people and their families. So that's very rewarding to me. So that was the first part. About a year after that, I trained at Cigna. I started my own firm, Security Financial Group, in about 1991. At that point, my goal was always to provide what I call complete financial planning. And what I mean by that is most financial firms out there, if they're an insurance company or an accountant or an estate attorney, they're doing one aspect of a client's issue, but they're not coordinating all three. My goal was to do all. I mean, I'm an ex-jock, and I look at football in the sense that my clients are the owner of the team, and I'm their financial quarterback, making sure they accomplish their goals, not my goals, which most people are doing. They're pushing people into what they think they should do. Our goal is to do what they want to accomplish and help them accomplish it. So there's three aspects you need to look at, of course. How your state is involved, because that's a foundation of any proper financial planning. How the tax consequences are, and of course, as we know, going into the future, taxes are only going to be more and more and getting intense as we see what's happening in our economy. And then, of course, the last, your investments, and what are they doing for you, and are they accomplishing your goal, and can you sleep at night? One of the big things that I'm very concerned about is put clients in investments that they can sleep at night and they're not going to have a heart attack because of what's going on in the economy. So those three aspects are very important. That's how I focus my company from day one. We provide access to all those services. We actually provide about 13 different services for our client because we want to be that one-stop shop for them. As you mentioned, we have 18,000 plus clients right now, over almost 20 years, and time sure flies, but I'm very proud of the fact that I probably have saved, and my employees, billions of dollars in probate and estate tax by what the planning we've done. So that's taking it out of the IRS's pocket and putting it back in our client's pocket where it belongs.
That's interesting. And maybe, Al, you could tell a little bit more about Security Financial Group. You've touched on some of the principles of the firm, but help our audience to understand your company from your perspective.
Okay. Our client base is basically greater Southern California, so from the Mexican border to the valley and into the desert. There's about 18 million people in that general area, pretty good group of people. We provide services for them, so we'll go out and see clients in their home or office, whatever they prefer, and we will sit there and go through what they want to accomplish. And my staff, as well as myself, will design things that fit their needs, that hit their peace of mind of what they want to accomplish. And SFG specifically, as you mentioned, we were nominated and won as one of the top wealth managers for Orange County. Now, just to dovetail on what that's all about, we didn't pay for that. It's not one of those things that you pay to get your name in a magazine. They interviewed 6,400 people in Orange County. From that, they had 400 firms. that they narrowed it down to. And of the 400, we were one of the top. So I'm very honored to the fact that that was client-driven. We had nothing to do with that. Matter of fact, they made a call and said, you won. I said, okay, what's this going to cost me? And it didn't. So I was very honored as a firm, because that's our client saying, hey, these guys do what they say and keep on seeing us. We try to see our clients on the average every 2 years proactively, not reactively, proactively. We're coming out and seeing them and looking at their situation. Because, you know, financial planning, business planning, all that, it's a snapshot of a moving picture. And that means it's constantly changing. Maybe it won't change for years. But within that period of time, they may not even know. You know, they have a child born, or God forbid someone dies, and they haven't adjusted their estate plan. We're out there saying, let's see where you're at.
You know, it's interesting that you have so many clients, greater than 18,000, but yet you, what you just touched on, and I'd like you to take a minute and explain your business model a little bit more, Al, because when you and I first met and we began discussing your business, I was impressed, really, with the level of commitment and customer service that your firm has. So let's take a minute and kind of go back a little bit and just go into your business model a little deeper for our audience, please.
Okay, my pleasure. First thing we do with a client. And this is a, I know you focus on business owners, but this relates to everybody that in California owns over $100,000. Because if you own anything over $100,000, you go through probate if you don't have a proper estate plan. And I mean that, a revocable living trust. Let me tell everybody in your radio audience and internet audience, if you own a home, if you have assets over $100,000, you need a living trust, a revocable living trust. This allows you to not go through probate. Probate is the biggest issue. It's a tax that our government puts on us that most people are not aware of, but it's trillions of dollars between probate and estate tax that's going to the government if you don't properly plan. So if you have the first thing we do with a client, it's like the foundation on a house. You don't build a house on quicksand. You build a house on a great foundation. So the first thing you need is a proper living trust so that everything you build and you earn and you build this business will go to your heirs that you want to go to and not to the IRS or the state of California, which they can't do anything right with our money anyways. But that's a whole other story. But we the key is that. Now, once we have that foundation built, we have an attorney that produced a proper living trust for them, then we'll look at other aspects of helping them grow their estate in the sense of business, investment, so forth. Now, since you are really focused on the business owner, let me tell you how important the estate planning is for that. A business owner, you know, most of your business owners are so busy running their business, building their business, that they're not thinking of this aspect. And what I explain to our clients is everything you're building, anywhere from 50 to 60% is going to go to the government if you don't do proper planning. And that's their biggest error, and they don't even realize that. So when you have a business owner, yes, he or she is building that business. Well, what are you doing to make sure that you have a succession plan, which means that the business will go to a partner or another child or whatever it is, instead of the state of California, which in most situations, if you don't have proper planning, they will liquidate a business and just, you know, get whatever money they can out of it. If you have a partner in a business and one has a trust and the other one does not, well, guess what? The one that doesn't have a trust will go through probate. And guess who you just have as a partner in your business? The state of California. They're not a good partner in any business. So that's not good. And then the worst scenario, really, is a spouse. Let's say you have two partners and the one partner passes away and they don't have proper estate planning. Well, guess what happens? The spouse comes in and wants to run their part of the business. And they may not know anything about the business. In most situations, the reason this happens is because they don't have proper planning. They don't have what's called a buy-sell agreement, where the living partner will buy out the interest of the deceased partner. But again, then you got the spouse coming in, and that's why there's a government statistic that 60% of solely owned businesses do not pass to the next generation because they don't have proper planning. And that's a shame because they're sitting there building a very successful business and thinking that it's going to pass to their children and their grandchildren or whatever it may be, and it doesn't happen. And it actually affects both families because if one partner has the proper estate planning done and the other doesn't, it still affects the business. So as partners have it, and we have a lot of partnerships and businesses and so forth, you need to make sure both of you are accomplishing that goal for both interests. So these are the problems I see all the time as a business owner, that they're so busy building this business that they're not thinking about, wait, I'm getting 60% of the government if I don't have my foundation built. And that's the kind of stuff we see.
That's interesting. And I guess I'd ask, as a wealth manager and financial advisor, in your opinion, in addition to what we've talked about so far, you know, what are the key areas of financial planning for business owners and top executives? I mean, Al, where should they be focused today as they try to plan for their future, especially in this current uncertain environment?
Right, right. Well, our focus, first of all, I'll let you know that we don't do any investments where there's a risk of principal. Our focus is mainly index annuities and fixed annuities. So we have over $1 billion in management. We never lost a dime for a client. So that's our first goal. We sleep at night, and so do our clients. So it's really easy in that aspect of it. But like I said before, when they build a business, a lot of times, here's another problem that business owners have, is they give it off to the investment advisor, and God forbid it's a Madoff or somebody like that, and they lose it all, or they're just not staying focused on what's going on there. So they should, first of all, be involved in their investments. If they're with us or anybody, they should know what they're investing in. And I know sometimes that's hard, because the business owner is so focused on what they're doing that they're not looking at those investments and not looking. I know a lot of people don't even want to open their statements in the last 6 months to a year, but you should do that because you need to know where you stand. The worst thing you could do is put your head in the sand and hope that it turns. So you need to adjust periodically. That's one of the things why we see our clients as well, to see where their investments are going. You show them the peace of mind because of what we do. But to me, the business owner, it's sometimes, and it's very common, like a doctor or something, they're so good at what they're doing. They're so good at building a business and generating this income, but they lose track of the other aspect of that business. So they need somebody like us, a financial quarterback, and I keep on using the athletic things, but that's how I relate to things. Because we're going to look at the investment, what you're comfortable with, the tax aspect of it, which is very important, and then, of course, how that asset is going to pass to your heirs or whatever function you want. So when we look at those, I said earlier, complete financial planning, that means we're going to look at all three aspects of that. And number four for us, which is really part of the estate planning area, is business succession. I really harp on that when you have a business owner that you are doing. You need to have planning here, because if you don't, you're going to have a nightmare and you're not going to have that business that you want to pass to your heirs. So we show them the scenarios. We tell them true scenarios. I know of a business that $42 million business, true business. This is what they were generating in 1 year, $42 million. Not bad. And one of the partners died, 42. He was on a Sea-Doo, had an accident at the river, died. His wife came in with the 9-inch nails and said she's going to run the business. Well, she knew nothing about the business, of course, and the other partner was completely frustrated. That business ended up going under because the partner that was there didn't want to deal with this person. She didn't know how to run the business. So not only did you lose a great asset for your family and so forth, but employees, the whole thing blew up because they just didn't do that basic proper financial planning. And what I mean by that, and I'll just dovetail into that, a partnership is what you normally want to do is do what's called a buy-sell agreement. And a simple buy-sell agreement, it's drawn up by an attorney, and what it says is, I'm partner A, you're partner B. Whoever dies first, the other partner will buy out their interest. And they pick a number. So, you know, the number is going to be fair on both sides because they both have to agree on it. So once they fix that number, normally what they'll do is they'll buy a life insurance policy, and that's why we provide that for our clients. We have access to that. But they'll do a life insurance policy to buy out the other person's interest. So to use simple numbers, let's say it's a $20 million business, $10 million each. So they each buy a $10 million policy on each other. Now, I recommend they buy it personally because when that other partner dies, not only do they get that life insurance policy that cashes out the spouse, but they get the basis of that. And what I mean by that is that $10 million policy might have cost them, let's just say over a few years, $10,000. But the actual value is $10 million. So when they buy out the spouse, that $10 million will be their base. So when they sell their business in the future, they saved all that capital gains because they have a higher base of $10 million. Now, we all know capital gains is roughly, long-term capital gains is 15% right now. But I guarantee everybody on your radio audience that that's going to go up to 25 to 35 within a very short period of time. So this is why we're like a chess game as well. We're looking 4 or 5 years in the future and saying, okay, here's what might happen. Let's do this as well. So now you have a situation where one partner dies, the other one buys out the other, the business stays in business, that partner owns the whole thing now. The spouse is happy because they got $10 million tax-free, by the way, because it's a death benefit, and it's a win-win for everybody.
That's interesting, which leads me to my last question that I wanted to ask you, and maybe you've touched on it, but maybe you haven't, Al. You've worked with so many business owners in the years that you've been in business. You know, if you can categorize one thing as maybe the biggest mistake that a business owner is making as they're planning for their financial future, is there one kind of biggest mistake that you've seen them make that you would like to use some time here to talk to our business owners and listening audience about?
Well, yeah, I think what I'll say again, I know I reiterated this a few times, proper estate planning. You know, that's the most important thing. Make sure you have that living trust in place and both partners, not one, not the other. You know, if I would do it I do it as a company plan and say, look, we're doing estate planning for both partners. And it's very important that the employees understand this as well, if they want to let them know that there's continuity planning, there's succession planning, so they feel comfortable. But my key thing is you have to understand only about 2 to 3% of the people in the country have a living trust. That's fact. So, you know, there's a lot of wills out there. But let me tell you, gentlemen, a will is the biggest mistake you can make in California, because in a will, you're guaranteed to go through probate. And if you don't have a will, you go intestate, which means the state will generate a will for you. So, first of all, most important thing, again, is that foundation. Build, have that living trust properly done. Have your heirs figured out. I mean, believe me, even the smallest estates, and we have clients from hundreds of millions to, you know, 500,000 to a million, and sometimes the worst estates are the ones that are 200 to 500,000. The heirs get in there, they contest it, it gets really nasty because there's no proper planning, and it ends up being just a nightmare. So as a business owner, you work so hard to build that successful business. Make sure you do the proper estate planning so that that business will go to who you want it to go to and not some lawyer in the state of California that determines it and just wants to get money for the state coffers, which they need a lot of.
Al, I really appreciate you taking time away from your friends and family on a Memorial Day afternoon in sunny Southern California.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And I'm going to have you back on in the future because I know you're doing some other exciting ventures that we'd like to have our audience learn about. And we'll schedule time to do that in the future. But for now, you've given a lot of good, valuable insight. If someone wants to reach out and learn more from you and get in contact with you, how does someone get in touch with you?
It'd be my pleasure. First of all, I want everybody to know we give a free, no-cost obligation review on any client from your radio audience that wants to meet with us. No cost at all. We review what they have. If they want us to do something, they'll know what it costs, and it'll be right up front. But we have a website, of course, everybody does now, trustsfg.com, because we believe, obviously, trust is the foundation of everything. We also have, and again, I'll spell it for you, trustsfg.com. We also have a toll-free number. It's 1-877, and I'll do this for you, no tax, the number to use. So 1-877-N-O-T-A-X, the number 2, and use. So our whole goal here is to avoid taxes. You pay it. We all pay enough as it is. Let's not pay this involuntary tax that we're not aware of, and we can avoid it if you do the proper planning.
Again, thanks, Al. That was great, and I look forward to speaking with you in the future and having you back on a future episode of Critical Mass. Thanks, Al. Have a good day.
My pleasure.
All right. That was a good session, we'll turn our attention now to our second guest. Our second guest is Jan Norman. Jan is an accomplished author and columnist. I'll tell you a little bit about her. She writes a very popular It's Your Business column for the Orange County Register, which is one of California's largest daily newspapers. The column explores solutions to problems faced by small business owners. Jan's also written 5 books under the title What No One Ever Tells You About, and then there are a variety of different subjects that she has explored over the years in these books. The Orange County Register also published a book of more than 40 of Jan's columns entitled It's Your Business, A Practical Guide to Entrepreneurship. Her coverage of small business has been honored by the U.S. Small Business Administration with its top award, national award, for journalists. Jan has spoken on entrepreneurial issues to hundreds of business groups, and it's a pleasure to have her as a guest on Critical Mass this afternoon. Jan, can you tell our audience how you ended up at the Orange County Register?
I was a general news reporter at a daily newspaper in Los Angeles County, fairly young, much younger than I am now, and the Orange County Register was expanding. So reporters, when they're young, are ambitious and always trying to make the next step up. So I applied and actually was a general assignment reporter with the general news section at first. Then about 1985, the business section was expanding. The Los Angeles Times had come up with a standalone daily business section. So to compete, the Orange County Register had to have one too, which meant they needed more staffing. And I was hired for that position. I started covering telecommunications and then moved on to real estate, then to retailing. And the editor at that time, the business editor at the time, had a column. He says, I think we should cover our small businesses, which was a fairly unusual concept, even today in journalism. So he started the It's Your Business column. This was Mike Kogenschlag. And when he was promoted to the editor of the paper, then the new editor said, Jan, will you take over this column? And I continued doing my regular beat and had the column once a week. It has evolved because we have so many dynamic small business owners here in Orange County into a full-time beat.
Jan, you're a business writer, and you're focusing on small business. You've been covering this beat for a number of years now. What have you learned from this experience?
Boy, a number of years is it's actually been 21 years that I have been doing the It's Your Business column, and as an extension, covering other stories besides the column, writing books, talking to thousands of business owners. I think the neat thing is that small business owners and entrepreneurs are the salt of the earth. These are people who are unpretentious. They will share information just to save somebody else from that error that they made, and they don't have this corporate, oh, you can't talk about that, they don't control, they just want to help other people. And that's very helpful for a reporter. It probably helps that I don't come with this agenda saying I'm going to, you know, make you out to be the bad guy. I'm just trying to share information. So I think that knowing the business owners I have known is one, how hard they work, what persevering personalities they are, and then how they share in a way that helps me to be a conduit. It's as if I know something, this guy needs the information, and I'm sort of in between sharing the information for them, and that's a lot of fun.
In addition to your writing for the Orange County Register, you've also written 5 books, as I mentioned earlier, under the title What No One Ever Tells You About. What was your inspiration for not only starting, but then also maintaining this series?
The one thing I noticed over the years as I was talking with business owners was how often they would say, you know, if I knew then what I know now, and complete the sentence, and you probably hear this a lot in your line of work. So, in fact, that was the title I proposed, If I Knew Then, and basically asking people, the very first book was What No One Ever Tells You About Starting Your Own Business. And so it was, if you knew when you started your business what you know now, what would you do differently that would make it a success more quickly, or would have alleviated some of the problems and difficulties that you had in starting the business? That was the inspiration for it. Because the publisher had come up with what I consider to be a very saleable title, it lent itself to a series of books that What No One Ever Tells You About Marketing, What No One Ever Tells You About of franchising, what no one ever tells you about financing your business. With those other ones, though, I didn't say what mistakes did you make as much as what did you use, what worked for you, in order to get 101 chapters for each of those books on those particular topics.
As you mentioned, Jan, your first book was What No One Ever Tells You About Starting Your Own Business, which was published first in 1999. You know, as I reread your book in preparation for this interview, I was struck with how pertinent your content is in today's economy, to today's entrepreneurs and business owners. What key lessons from that book do you think are of particular importance to an entrepreneur or business owner today?
It's interesting that you would say that, because in picking the chapters that I did, and they're fairly short chapters because they're self-contained, one example in and out, but I was looking for the things that seem to be most often that people talked about the most as they ran their business. And by the time I wrote this book, I had been doing this well over 10 years, so I had some frame of reference. So, for example, I knew you need to write a business plan. I mean, how often have you heard that, but why and how does it have an application for a business? And if you notice, the example in the book isn't from someone who failed because they failed to write a business plan. They almost failed because they were growing too fast. And the business plan puts a frame around a business that's so important that you actually know what to say no to as well as what to say yes to. You know where you're headed. So that's a very basic thing, but in talking with business owners over time, and we had a feature for a while, very popular feature, in which people in startup businesses would talk about how they got started in business. And I bet you 90% of them hadn't written a business plan, or if they did, it was one of those I got it here in my head kind of ideas. So knowing how important that was, it became a chapter in the book. I don't know that I did it realizing that this was going to be universal for all time, but you're right, there are certain basic things about running a business that don't change. Even though fads might change, the first book, really, in talking to people in the late 90s and letting them frame the mistakes that they made, only one person mentioned the internet. By the time I did a revision of this book for my publisher a few years later, it's a whole section in that book. But see, that's sort of a tool. The whole basics of how do you communicate with people, with your employees, with your customers, that's basic. So those elements within the startup book, the very first startup book, of communicating are pretty basic and universal, and probably if you looked at business books written in 1900, you'd find the same thing, because people doing business with each other doesn't change that much over time. It's probably more unusual within the United States, and on Amazon, I read one of the critiques of the book at one point. It was written by somebody in the UK, and they griped because it wasn't about how to run a business in the UK. So maybe there are differences with other countries, but when you're running a business in the United States, there are some basic truths. So let's look at the writing of the business plan. But another one would be never stop marketing. It kills me how people get busy and then they don't market and they wonder, what happened to my business? I mean, how basic is that? Or another very basic thing, do you understand how to read your financials? Drives me nuts that people can't tell you the bottom line and I can't be bothered with that. Well, yeah, and then they find themselves in down times and they wonder what happened, what hit them, because they hadn't been looking at those numbers every single day, every single week, and making those adjustments. Because it's not that businesses fail from one single thing. And running a business, unless it is rocket science, is not rocket science. So there are 1,000 little things that most people can do. Talk to people, sell, make things. There are just these thousands of things that come together to be business ownership that if you do them right, you're probably going to succeed more times than not. The trouble is I find so many people who don't want to do that, or they get lazy, or they fall down on one thing or another, and then their business falls apart. So there are basic things.
You had mentioned the importance of marketing, and you wrote a book, What No One Ever Tells You About Marketing Your Own Business. You provide real-life advice of 101 successful business owners and entrepreneurs. You cover a lot of ground in this book, and I wanted to ask you a specific question. In the preference, you have a very interesting perspective on what marketing is versus what I think may be a commonly held understanding. Excuse me. Would you explain to our audience your view of what marketing is for a company?
I think what you're talking about is that that a lot of people think of marketing as being advertising. They think it's the ad they put in the newspaper, the Yellow Pages ad, the commercial on TV. But when you talk to people about how they and from that, you get people who say, oh, I don't market my business. But they do, and it's because the real part of marketing is it's everything that you do and set up in your business that conveys something about the business to your employees, to your stakeholders, to your suppliers, as well as to your customers. So, for example, you have a name for your business. If that name doesn't work for you, it's really a counter-marketing tool for you. If it is right for your business, it actually helps build your business. Now, one of the key ways that people market themselves is that they talk to people. It's a pretty easy way to market. They network, they interact with their customers, they send out invoices, they send letters or phone calls. All of that is marketing. However, the way they present themselves, and there are whole consulting practices out there that talk to you about what you look like and how you stand and how you present yourself. And there are speech coaches who work with people about how they talk, how they answer questions. You get this with politicians a lot, but with business owners and executives too, who have to explain their companies. That's all marketing as well, because if you don't represent your business well, and this is especially true of entrepreneurs, if you don't have a good, interesting story to tell, you really undermine the marketing that you're doing for your business. So that's the holistic approach to marketing. And when you start thinking of marketing in that sense, what was interesting about this, and this was the second book that I did, when I did a revision of the startup book, I added a very important chapter to that one. If you'll recall, I asked people the mistakes that they made. So this particular element of marketing didn't come out until I did the marketing book and was asking people, what was the most important thing that you did to market your business? And the number one answer just surprised me. No way thought of it, and that's why I came up with the idea that marketing is more holistic. Number one most common answer was ethical treatment of customers. Who would have thought that ethics and being honest with people was a marketing tool? But small business owners get that over time, and the reason it doesn't show up in mistakes, because if you get that one wrong, you're not in business. So I did go back and add that, and you kind of have to do a twist on that, because in order to set that foundation from the very beginning of honesty and integrity and how I'm going to treat my customers, it sets the tone for everything else. So it's a very important element. And who would have thought of that until just talking to business owners? Certainly not a reporter. It's something that an outside person doesn't observe as much as the person running the business. So I think that's the kind of approach that people who really get marketing understand. And that's just one example of things that most people wouldn't think of as marketing, as really being fundamental to marketing their business.
In addition to marketing as a fundamental truth for running a business, financing, and especially in today's economy, it's a challenge for business owners and top executives to continue to secure financing. Your book, which you wrote, which is titled What No One Ever Tells You About Financing Your Own Business, I found it interesting that in a book that was dedicated to financing, you had a section on developing mentors. Would you talk about how having mentors can help a business owner in the area of financing?
It's interesting when people think about in terms of getting money for their business. On the surface of it, they start thinking in terms of it's a bank loan. But when you look at how businesses are financed, the startups get most of their money from the entrepreneur himself or herself, family and friends, and then it builds from there. But though a vast majority of the money for startups come from people they know. Now, if you can't convince somebody who loves you and knows you that your business is worth putting money into, how are you going to convince a stranger? So the idea of having mentors, these are people who you rely on for advice and also for relationships. It's good to have friends, and friends will help you with financing, but mentors are also people who know other people. And often, they themselves have achieved a level of experience and financial independence, perhaps, where they know people who are looking for your opportunity, and they're willing to trust the mentor that you're worth investing. And when you're getting into those kinds of investments, not loans, not public financing, but you're talking about people who are putting money into your business, they're probably going to come both with advice and money. So you have to be willing and have that relationship. Who better for you to say, I trust my mentor that this guy is not going to steal my business? So it works two ways. The money guy is trusting the mentor to say, this is a business worth investing in, and he's not going to be a flake and walk out the door when going gets tough. And then for the business owner to trust the mentor that the person who is giving him money is not going to run roughshod, that he's an honest person, and then he's not going to take the business away and boot me out of my own business.
I'd like to stay with your theme and talk a little bit. In the next book, which was What No One Ever Tells You About Franchising Your Own Business, you point out how important it is for entrepreneurs and business owners to learn from each other's mistakes. I remember when growing up, my dad, who was grew up during the Depression, he said, you know, save $20, because when you have money, $20 isn't anything. But when you're broke, $20 is a lot of money. Can you give us and the audience more insight into your philosophy of why it's important for business owners to learn from other businesses, especially in these uncertain economic times?
You saying that reminds me of my own dad. And when we had to put him in a nursing home, in his wallet, he had a single $20 bill. So there must have been something about the guys who grew up in the recession, in the Depression, the Great Depression, about the $20 bill. What is our equivalent to the $20 bill? Whether this has lasting impact or whether it is a glancing blow the way of even the 1980s recession, it was tough, but I don't know how it changed people. If this one is a transformative recession, I think it may be to be paying more attention to the basics. There are people who started doing things with their housing, and with their businesses, with their credit cards, that got out of hand in a lot of different ways. People living on debt, not willing to postpone gratification. I see people learning some lessons about prudence. It's okay to maybe borrow, but maybe to be more prudent and more basic about running their businesses and their own personal life. And if we learn a little bit of balance from that, maybe that's a very valuable lesson. If it is prolonged, I think we may go back to more fundamental lessons that they'd learned in the Great Depression of sharing with each other when you don't have enough and I've got two of them. Maybe there is more sharing involved, and that wouldn't be a bad thing. One thing I have told a lot of business owners when I talk to them about the current economy, they're looking for answers. And I don't know that I have a whole lot of answers, but I do tell them about a couple. They own a rope business in Santa Fe Springs, and they decided they wanted to do something beyond the business, and they found that children in Africa do not have even a toothbrush. They don't even have a yo-yo. So they started a ministry in which they gather backpacks and they fill them with little fundamental things that these kids need for their everyday life. And those of us who helped fill backpacks were told, don't give them anything with batteries because they don't have access to batteries. Don't give them anything electric. Their houses are huts. They live in little tin caves. And so as I tell these business owners, put it in perspective. If I lost my job today and never worked again, I will never be as poor as those children and their families. So take and put that in perspective for your own business. We are one of the most blessed countries in the world. We have an abundance, even as we are going through a tough recession. Don't lose sight of that.
I think that's great perspective, and thank you for sharing that with our audience. And something you had said earlier, which I'd like to come back on, which is a lot of people in these uncertain economic times are looking for answers. And, you know, in covering small business owners for as long as you have, how have you found them as it relates to what I call the power of CEO peer groups?
It goes back to the way that I have always run the column. The column doesn't necessarily have answers, but it finds people who have problems, and because nothing is unique, nothing is the first time ever, you can find other people who have been through that same thing. The beauty of entrepreneurs and small business owners is that they're willing to help and to say, here's how I dealt with that issue. In peer groups, I think you're probably finding this same kind of experience. Maybe not everybody at the table has had that same experience, but invariably one or two has gone through that same kind of problem before. Here's how I handled it. So why should you reinvent the wheel? Why should you live there in isolation and say, how am I going to solve this, when you can borrow from Fred and borrow from Susie ways that they dealt with it, mix it all together a little bit, come up with the one that's suitable for your own business. But you got those ideas just by listening to how other people dealt with that. I find that the people don't want to admit mistakes. They don't want to say, oh, I'm having trouble in business. Things are hunky-dory all the time. But if they're sitting with a group of people they've gotten to know, and they say, hey, I'm struggling with this, people are really willing to share information. And I think that's a revelation with other people, is that they go, oh, they're actually telling me something. They're telling me for free. They're not expecting anything out of this. And hey, that sparks something in my own mind, and yeah, this will work. So I think that that's why it's so important to listen to other people who have been there, done that, because you save a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of angst in your life, because you get to the solution much more quickly.
I find that your blog is great for sharing of ideas. You have a tip section which helps people to get the latest thinking. And so you write this blog as a part of Orange County Register's online efforts. Can you talk to our audience about your philosophy for your blog?
The blog is basically a tool, and I have been writing about small businesses for over 20 years now. And as the print newspaper has shrunk because of financial considerations, we're able to put more things online. And I find that with the blog, it is I'm much more able to tell little stories. Over the weekend, I had a post about a company that sells gum that costs $14.99 a pack. Who is going to pay $14.99 for a pack of gum? Well, this is that's 144 pieces, and it is sweetened with xylitol, which has been shown in clinical tests to fight tooth decay. You think moms aren't going to want that? People who have teeth problems aren't going to want that? All the comments were about, wow, yeah, you know, this is something, and how about this? And, oh, he's stupid to do that. So it's the interactivity that you can never get in the printed word. And I'm probably doing 3 to 4 times more online than is in print. Of course, people still say, well, is this going to be in your column? Is this going to be in the print newspaper? So people still love the print product, but as far as people finding out about them online, it is much more interactive. They can share information, which has always been the idea of my small business coverage anyway, to get people to jump in and say, well, I wouldn't do it that way, or have you thought about this, and how about this? And that's the beauty of blogs. I think for a long time they were thought to be, oh, just teenage girls writing about what they do for lunch. But increasingly business people are blogging. They are podcasting, which is putting audio online. They're doing whole radio shows, as you're doing, because they become real good ways to share information with people inexpensively, where everybody can access it. With your radio show, you're not limited to, it's noon and I can't, on Wednesday, and I can't listen. It's available for download later as an MP3. That's a terrific way of sharing that information for all time. So that's why the blog is a good way to get more voices out there. I try to share information that people have. I call them tip of the day, although it's becoming a kind of not everyday tip. You know. But if you've got an area of expertise, so these you send me that information and I share it with people. I link to your website. People can give feedback on what you said, and it builds a whole body of information for other people to say, oh, I'm not in it alone. Here's some information. These are like-minded people. Let me go see if there's some information that will help me run my business. And that's the purpose of it. Some of it's goofy, like the gum. Some of it is real serious, like problems that people are encountering in their business with the recession. We have had any number of people talking about how am I coping. We have a Laguna Beach boutique. One of the things she did was she took everything and put it on the ceiling. So it's called the Upside Down Boutique. Just some way to differentiate herself in the marketplace. Is that for everybody? No, but it might spark some creativity in the reader to save his own business. Another one found that her upscale boutique, designer boutique, wasn't working, so she opened a whole section of consignment for people who would bring in their stuff that they no longer needed. That would give them money to go spend money in the someplace else in the economy, and it might open up to the reader how else can I think differently about my business to catch on to where money is being made right now in my industry instead of just giving up and saying I can't do that. So the blog, that's what the blog does an awful lot of the time. And just shameless plug, it's at ocregister.com/Jan.
Jan, you've been a great guest this afternoon, and you gave your blog location. But can you tell the audience, if someone wants to get in touch with you, how would they get in touch with you?
The email is probably the best way. So it would be the letter J, Norman, N-O-R-M-A-N, at ocregister.com. They can also go on the blog, can find contact information, make comments, and share information with me. And that's www.ocregister.com/Jan.
Jan, I can't recommend your books in the strongest terms enough. I think the content contained in them is very pertinent and valuable to business owners and entrepreneurs, excuse me, not just here in Orange County in Southern California, but across the world, since we're reaching them today here on the internet. And so I would suggest that they rush out and purchase not just one, but a number of the copies of the books that you've written. If they wanted to do that, how does someone who wants to buy your book find them?
I think the best way nowadays is to get it on Amazon.com. You do a search. They have a pretty good search engine, and just do a search either on the title or my name, and books will turn up.
Well, Jan, I'd like to thank you for being a guest today, as I did with Al. It's great to have you on the show on this Memorial Day holiday. I appreciate your willingness to share your knowledge with our audience. As everyone knows, Doug Gefeller, my partner, and I lead CEO peer groups in Orange County. We build them to help our business owners and top executives make better, more informed decisions. We believe that happens from being with other business owners and top executives who lead similarly sized firms. And so I would encourage you, if you're interested in learning more about what Doug and I do for a living outside of the radio show, check out my website, which is www.thepowerofceopeergroups.com. That's thepowerofceopeergroups.com. If you'd like to reach out and talk to me directly, you can reach me at rfranzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I, at executiveforums, F-O-R-U-M-S.com. Or you can find information on the radio station site here, which is LA Talk Radio, and you can find more information about our show, Critical Mass. I do appreciate everyone listening and look forward to next week's show when Doug will be hosting the show, and I'm hoping that all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You're listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller. Only on LA Talk Radio.